pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me always is Nathan. And I there was another Voldemort scar joke I was going to make, but I just felt like it would be in poor taste. With us again is Terry. Woo!
That's hobby, racist.
Hobby Health Blog Terry.
Hobby Health Blog Terry.
We'll call you Yellow Falcon. But it is currently 42 degrees in Arizona at night in the shade with no breeze whatsoever. It's also humid as fuck. And I've decided to also Arizona. Smoke. And I'm going to smoke and drink during this podcast because that's a, it's a tradition at this point.
Yeah. You know, it's all about standards. Hey, wait. Hold on. What are you drinking? Because, you know, less than 20% is for pussies, right?
Gin and juice.
There you go. You're good.
Yeah, I'm drinking gin and juice because I had some leftover gin and my wife horked all of the fucking cola, so I couldn't do rum and coke, even though like I'd been prepping for it. Like prior to this, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be ready to go. Rum and coke, podcast time. Nope. I guess it's gin and juice and menthol cigarettes, which is a very interesting combination.
Jesus.
What are you guys drinking?
Well, since I was at the Stampede all day where I had double bacon corn dogs, and I tried to get a deep-fried Philly cheesesteak, but they were sold out. Like, come on. What kind of world can I not get a deep-fried Philly cheesesteak in? So I am back on the bacon maple ale because I already feel like shit. So what? Who cares?
There you go. Terry?
I am drinking a delicious Australian Moscato, and it comes in a screw-top lid, which is totally classy and quite awesome, but it actually tastes really good. So
Terry likes the screw tops, doesn't she? Oh. All right, so yes, it's Jaded Gamercast. Hey, why don't we start the show? Sounds like a good plan. If you hear crickets in the background, it's because I am literally in my backyard at my parents' house. I'm going to try not to cuss loudly, because, yeah, my mom will, like, randomly walk by and look at me and just be like, oh, he's recording his podcast, even though I've told them never to go anywhere near it. They don't even know the website. But, yeah. All right, let's get this started. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. I did not do fucking anything except look longingly at some Firestorm models and think about how sweet it would be to, I don't know, play a game. That's always the weird thing when I'm on vacation. I'm just like, I'll sit here and I'll just be like, yeah, maybe I should call Jade. Fuck, I can't call Jade. Can't get a game, but maybe Matt. No, damn it.
See, this is why
I get the itch.
This is why I told you like last episode. I'm just like, dude, just bring like two fleets, find some random Joe who will trounce you because beginner's luck seems to fuck you over harder than anything else.
It happens.
And at least that way you can scratch that itch while you're gone. Because otherwise, all you have to do is just masturbate. And I mean, eventually that gets old.
It's hard to find a good place to masturbate in my parents'
house. With that heat and the humidity, there's like the chance of chafing, and that's just not good.
Oh, the chafing happens regardless. There's no way around it. My crotch is just a swamp. It's Dagobah down there. There's no way around it. You just have to deal with it. It's part of living in Arizona. Nathan, what have you been up to this week?
I need more time. You make a Dagobah reference to your crotch and you expect me to be on point? All right.
Sorry.
Jesus Christ, like, that is just unfair. No, for me, I've been looking longingly at my Infinity models and thinking that I might just paint them up.
Because I pulled them out.
Yeah, she pulled them out for her vlog and I was just like, fuck, those guys are nice. And the whole gang is like seven guys. I can get behind this. Okay. But other than pining for shit, I haven't really done anything.
They are gorgeous models.
And what about you, Terry?
I have been doing a lot of hobby. Actually, I've been doing more hobby than... Like, I've been doing hobby during work hours.
Video evidence is...
The video evidence. I figure for about, like, for every 1 minute of vlog I've made for Geek & Sundry, I've spent 10 hours in the process of making that minute, so...
So where are you right now on that voting results?
I am so I got into the top 30. If you haven't heard, they had like over 400 entries, and I was selected as one of the top 30 to move on to the finalist round, wherein they will be evaluating all of the vloggers again, and and using a new video that we've created, which is kind of like the first episode of what we're kind of pitching. And they're going to be using community feedback again. They're going to have another voting round, and that is going to weigh actually a lot more now that they've kind of weeded out the stuff that isn't a fit for them.
Yeah. Well, I went through a lot of the vlogs that people had put forward, and you know, like the stuff at the top had like so many votes, mm-hmm. and there was like 10 people with like huge amounts of votes, and then like it petered off. So you kind of wonder, like, is it just a networking thing? Like, are the Jada Gamercast fans just not dedicated enough to vote every day?
Apparently, they want me to drink a raw egg, which is going to be on the Jada Gamercast YouTube channel.
Like, I gave her an out because as soon as I read that, I'm like, dude, this is Jada Gamercast. Where the fuck is the alcohol? And I was just going to like veto it for like violating our terms of service. Like,
that actually is true. That's not on brand.
You know, like seriously, because I mean, you know, the Green Russian, the Jaded Gamer, at least these have alcohol in it.
They're you need to drink, and this is one of my favorites, mm-hmm. is you need a Dirty Lizard. And Dirty Lizard is a two-part shot of tequila and creme de menthe.
Oh!
And that's,
wow, you're...
Maddie knows. I've bought that for him on his birthday more than a few times. It is a disgusting shot.
I'll throw it up on the poll in the Facebook group, and I'll give it, like, one more day, and people can decide based on that whether or not they want it in. I'm going to be recording it on Tuesday, and hopefully it'll go up this week as some bonus content for the Jada Gamercast YouTube channel. So it will be made. I will be taking that shot. So,
all right. So,
and so on top of like the 60 plus hours of vlog outlining, scripting, recording, and editing, I also managed to get myself into a tournament at Imaginary Wars yesterday, which was really fun. So, yeah, I think I out hobby you for both of you combined for the month. At very least, I'm at about 70 hours.
Well, I mean, it's only the 7th. I mean, we've got time to catch up. I mean, right?
We're jaded. We're just in it for our pensions at this point. That's it. We're hanging out, running the clock. Nathan and I have both taken a knee.
I am 3 days away from retirement.
You're gonna get killed by Mendoza before you know it. All right, so yeah, Star Wars reference and a Simpsons reference. They're both gold. All right, so where are they going to be able to find your stuff to vote on it or to provide feedback in this next round?
You go to geekandsundry.com and just click the vlogger section. My name is under there. It is the name that my mother calls me, which is Teresa Latorco. And you can click there and vote. Check out the video and vote. I'm assuming we'll have a link in the Jada Gamercast Facebook page, of course. And I'll have a link in the video right on my website, thatterrygirl.com.
Also, everything just kind of got all echoey in our headphones. And as promised, if Terry does make it to the top 10, Lang and I love how I told him.
I watched that video and it was like the pain I could feel.
Oh, I know.
Going like, I like Terry, but do I like Terry that much?
I'm not gonna make you do it by yourself. Kim, like, I'm gonna take that nuclear bomb too, man. It's just not fair.
Dude, I think the worst part of that video is when he takes that pureed thing of vodka and fast food and tries to strain it into a couple shot glasses. God. That was the part for me where I was just like, oh Jesus Christ. So hey, if you want to watch three people who supposedly like each other really suffer through something, we will do that. And the only reason I voluntold you is because it was your idea for episode 100, and I thought that this is just fucking payback.
Oh, fuck off. Okay. Anyways, yes, by all means, I think it would be really good to see something like this on Geek and Sundry. We're all fans of Geek and Sundry and Felicia Day and all the stuff that they do. You know, there's a certain level of inspiration comes from the stuff that they do in it, like playing the old games and, you know, joking around and having fun. And it, It's a clean channel compared to the product that we put forward. However, it's entertaining as hell, and I think Terry would be a good fit for it. So if you guys are not aware, if you haven't voted yet, get out and vote. Get this on the front, and really support this type of hobby, because it is right up their alley. Mm-hmm. So I think they currently have like a Beast of War podcast or Beast of War video thing that goes up weekly on their site. They just kind of talk about releases and stuff like that, but yeah. It's not a lot of hobby aspects. So hopefully they see the difference mm-hmm. when they're looking at it, and they don't just go, well, we already have a thing from Beast of War, and they're actually looking for something hobby related mm-hmm. from an attractive Asian girl with tattoos. That's really
well, it's crazy because I'm of all the vloggers who entered 400 plus, I was the only one talking about mini war games.
Yeah.
And more than that, of all the 30 people who entered, like got into the finals, there are 3 people who are puppet enthusiasts. Three.
Exciting.
So, all I thought Link was going to choke on that one.
I feel like that doesn't exactly represent the geek community.
Well, I mean, you're only saying that because you didn't see my opponent of the last game in Adepticon, who was a puppet. Oh, so, I mean, there is actually some crossover there. No, but seriously, puppets.
No, I played puppeteers are on puppets, and it's crap. They were terrible. There's no reason to vote for something like that. But obviously, links are going to be posted. If you guys have any more questions for Terry, post them onto the Jaded Gamercast Facebook group on, believe it or not, Facebook. And let's get this thing going. I'm excited for it. I'm totally ecstatic that you made it into the top 30 and that they're actually going to be taking a close look at the work that you're doing. Because, yeah, it was a rough sea going through all those different vlogs trying to see, like, what people were putting forward, because there were some real winners, finger quotes. And it was all, like, slice of life shit where they're just like, I'm just going to talk about, you know, movies. I'm going to talk about TV. We're going to talk about Game of Thrones. And I'm just like, come on, like, how much of that shit is already there? So, you know what, hey, if it's something that they're into, awesome. And then we could hook up that four-way with Felicia Day.
You know, that. Why do you think I'm just like, you know what, Terry, you should really go for it?
There's no question in my mind.
Oh,
when,
yeah.
When I gave you the test of pick 3 people for your zombie survival group, one of them was Felicia Day, because you were like, well, I got to repopulate. And I was like, yeah, but you picked Batman. If Bruce is not going for you, man, like, this is not happening.
Yeah, but I mean, if there's only 4 survivors, at that point, I've got a 1 in 3 chance, which is significantly better than my current odds.
But you need to, like, mix it up, too, for genetic diversity, right? So everyone's got to have a chance at everyone else.
Yeah,
right?
But the guy he picked was not on the top of the hookup list. That man fizzled. All right, so anything else, Terry, to go along with that?
I put up like a thank you dance on my YouTube channel to some Star Wars disco, which was kind of crazy.
Which was the greatest 25-cent album, like, record we've ever found.
So there's that, and yeah, the shot video will be coming out this week on the Jaded Gamercast YouTube page. So if you're not subscribed to that, guys, I know that this is a podcast and you aren't really a big part of the visual vlogging community, but totally subscribe to the YouTube channel too, man. There's some really cool stuff on there. And yeah,
that's like how Lang and I troll each other through Dead Space.
If you haven't watched those videos, people, it is gold, because poor Lang is trying so hard to play this game well, and Nathan is just being a jackass about it the whole time. It's brilliant.
For the record, I think Lang is the one that started the fire that burned our house down.
I honestly, when I went back through, when I was sifting through the wreckage of that video and editing it, I was like, yeah, I lit that wall on fire. I was clicking pretty furiously, but it was out of anger, because I just love you so much, baby.
The door open. God damn him.
Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, that's that. I just have a question, because it was something that Terry was, we were talking about earlier today. So you were at a tournament this weekend. You got to play a whole bunch of games. You played 6 games in a day, which is a lot. And you kept asking people a certain question.
Well, I one of the things I did for this video coming up Freaking Sundry is I'm kind of introducing people to wargaming. So the idea is my video series is going to introduce people into the hobby and kind of bring them in slowly so that eventually I might have other people to play who are new and converted. But the thing was, is I pulled out these Infinity models and they are gorgeous. And it made me miss Games Workshop Pewter. The detail of them and the consistency of them is just it. You know, as much of a bitch it was to paint, they were just, they're beautiful models. And I was at the tournament, I played like six guys, like many of whom were playing, like, I think at the tournament there were 12 guys, six guys played, five or six of them played the new Eldar Codex.
There were a lot.
There was a lot of Eldar years. Representation at this tournament. And I asked all the guys I played, what they thought of the fine cast models in the new Eldar range, thinking, you know, because everyone's talked about how a lot of the fine cast issues were a production issue off the bat because they were catching up and they were rushing all this stuff out. So I asked them with the new stuff, you know, is it any better? Is it good? Do you like the fine cast? And the response was the same. Like, it's awful. It was awful to build. It sucks. It's still like full of bubbles and full of crap, and it's just a pain to deal with. And I haven't heard anything new about it, and it just makes me wonder. First of all, it makes me miss Pewter, which is kind of a big deal because I hated Pewter.
Oh my god, I know. Like, that was the thing, is when GW first announced that they were killing Pewter, I was happy. I was actually very, very happy.
Everybody
when
was.
The
we
news.
Were expecting Forge World.
We, you know, and I think that's exactly it. Is we were expecting Forge World.
Is what? Drink, Terry.
Woo!
I was going to say, we were all expecting Forge World quality resin in our GW models because their plastics had been getting that good, and instead we got, like, dollar store shit. And I think what's, like, that's, it's terrible because, I mean, I built the Red Terror. I built old metal Raveners with, like, the 1 millimeter join of, like, heavy tail where you had to drill and pin and, like, fucking green stuff. Just to get it to kind of hold. And again, I would go back to that in a heartbeat. And I think that that's telling. I mean, you yourself wanted to add Blood Knights and then just gave up.
Yep.
You know, so it's just like, how much, you know, lost sales are people, is GW experiencing just due to the quality? And again, what we said when it first came out, could this be because they have never in their history tried to produce so much so quickly? You know, they're trying to restock the world of like 40 different models all at once. It's a huge demand. And so, I mean, I, for one, gave them the benefit of the doubt saying, yeah, it looks like shit now, but it can only get better. But here we are, what, 2 years out, 3 years out? And nothing has improved. And people that are buying the brand new releases, you know, fine crap models are lamenting how bad it is. You know, they're still covered in flash and bubbles and mismolds and bullshit. And I mean, for fuck's sakes, Games Workshop came out with a toothbrush and they invented a new product to try to convince people that Finecast isn't the piece of shit that it really is.
Right.
I just want to say I miss Pewter. For the public record, I miss Pewter. And I never appreciated it until I saw the Pewter models coming out of other gaming lines that were purportedly, like, less good than Games Workshop. And I'll admit, the Infinity models, in terms of detail, they are less good than old Games Workshop Pewter. They are. But, man, it just, I don't know. It's really, it was a point of nostalgia for me, actually, looking at those models, so.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, I just find it crazy because, again, we know Finecast is still shit, and I still go out of my way to try to avoid Pewter models at all costs. However, if given the choice, I will always choose Pewter over Finecast. Like, it's just like, before I would avoid Pewter unless necessary, now I just avoid Finecast at all costs. Like, I do not own, nor will I.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, we remember also the press release that was sent out to, you know, retailers saying, like, yeah, here's how you talk about how great Finecast is, and you know, don't ever talk about how bad it is. You just always talk about how great it is, and here's all these awesome products.
Well, because it's not bad. You and your customers just don't know how awesome it is, so make sure you sell them on this kit.
Return everything. You can just upsell. Woo! Yeah, and that's, you know, all right. Let's stop beating that dead horse. All right, so let's move on to the weekly listener poll for this week, which was, which of the new Apocalypse releases are you the most excited about?
Woo!
And unsurprisingly, heads and tails above everyone else, with 12 votes, is the Big Ass Dice Cube.
Second
to that was the More Bigger Monolith, and then everything else was split between like one or two votes here and there. We had a couple comments. FD said none, which is pretty accurate. We had a comment here from Patrick. He said, the production of this entire debacle only confirms my belief that the collective intelligence level of the 40K community is continuing to march towards zero. Why anyone would plop down money for Big Gay Al's Big Gay Earth River is beyond me. The Space Marine characters are silly, completely overdone ripoffs of Forge World armor with enough bits and baubles attached to make a 70s pimp blush. No doubt they will sell a metric ass ton of this garbage to every neckbeard in the Northern Hemisphere. That he's talking about you, Dan. Who will play it once and then shelf it until next year's Festival of Fertility? Okay, Festival of Fertility. Why not? Under the vernal equinox as Tiburon plays a catchy tune on the skin flute of insemination. Well, that was poetic.
I was going to say that. That escalated quickly.
It escalated very quickly. One of these days, GW will jump the shark. Sadly, I don't think it's this day. Well played, GW. Well played indeed. Another comment from Doug Shanks. He said, sadly, none of the above wasn't an available option in the poll. I have no plans to purchase any of this useless APOC nonsense. Keep it coming with the new codices. Yes. Remember, codexes is actually...
the right term, because right codex term. Is a word that is trademarked under Games Workshop.
Correct.
It's a good thing Chapter House Studios didn't try to make codexes. They'd have lost that suit then. Yeah, and I mean, like, it's... I'm not surprised, because again, at least with the big-ass dice cube, it is something that is quasi-useful, unlike all the rest of this bullshit. You know, like I said, I don't know. The whole Apocalypse launch is such a fucking joke, which is part of the reason why, normally, if this were a codex, we'd be doing a codex review now, but fuck Apocalypse. I don't want to own it.
We all know, we all collectively know, that Apocalypse is Games Workshop attempt at a big cash grab. It's from the first time it released, we were like, oh yeah, it's obvious. They just want to sell more models in big boxes, right? Right.
More tanks.
But I think it's gotten so obvious now. And we have people who have collections of models that are at an Apocalypse size, like, army, right? You're at, like, guys who have like 5,000 points of Tyranids or like 4,000 points of Orcs. That's normal at the stage of the hobby that a lot of us are in, right? I personally have like 4,000 points of Tau. That's easy. But what breaks that whole thing, and what we were excited about initially when Apocalypse first came out, was we could play these big games with all our models. It was great. But it's the addition of the super heavies and all this crap, this additional crap that you can't use in your normal games, that sits on a shelf for, all 364 days a year. And once a year, you might get lucky and pull it out and bust out that stomper or bust out that
Listen,
whatever.
I have played... So the first Apocalypse came out in 2007, give or take. It was October of 2007. And from October of 2007 to July of 2013, I have played two Apocalypse games. So when you say 364
days,
you are totally, totally, totally not being truthful.
Well, it's, you know what it is? I think most people don't bust out their full army, right? Most people don't get the chance to bust out their full army. So yeah, I think we were all excited to initially have that opportunity. But now it's just, you can't play. And I think when you and John played that game at the first ProvoCon.
Oh God, that game of Apocalypse actually ruined all of 40K for me.
Like,
all of it. Like, after that game, I stopped playing 40K because it ruined all of it.
But I think at that point, that's when it became obvious it wasn't about the amount of 40K models you had. It became about the amount of apocalypse models you had. And it goes back to that issue I have. When you play games, you're not playing against the general across the table from you. You're playing against his wallet. That's what you're playing apocalypse against. You're playing against some guy's wallet. And that fucking sucks. That just sucks. It makes games not fun.
All right, so we finished. I mean, I really don't have much to say about this. I think the big-ass dice cube is about as far as it's going to get for me. I think that there are the odd, like, we had one person vote for the Blingdozer. We had, you know, two people vote for the heroes. Oddly enough, three people voted for the more expensive Baneblade. And a couple people voted for the...
Well, that's because you never said, what are people going to buy? You said, what's the best release? So basically, they're just voting that everything is...
What are you most excited about?
Yeah, I guess. Still, I think a more expensive Baneblade is still better than the Skulldozer. No, but I mean, not to be the apocalypse thing with the dead horse, but I do want to talk about something that was posted on the Jada Gamercast group that you may have missed because you've been on vacation.
Right.
But Mr. Josh Hathaway posted a link to the...
Yeah, I saw that one. Yeah.
Yes. So basically, what came about is when the Eldar book came out... GW created a bunch of sort of three packs. So you could buy Vipers instead of, you know, singles. You could buy a pack of three. Same thing with Warwalkers. They also did it with, like, Space Marine Bikes, Chaos Space Marine Bikes. You know, basically all of their single model bullshit kits, whereas, like, this is one plastic model. They just came out with a three box that ended up being about 2.5 times as expensive as a single model. So you ended up saving a little bit of money, which I know is... really out of character for this company, because rather than being, you know, forced to, oh, I need 12 jet bikes, time to buy 12 singles, you know, you could actually save a little bit of money by buying the three boxes. The problem happened is when we were talking about all those apocalypse one-click, you know, bundle formations, because, you know, God knows, I'm grateful to Games Workshop for saving me the tens of seconds required to add individual items to my cart so I can hopefully impulse buy, you know, $1,000 in a single click. They kind of fucked up because when they priced them based off of the old single model format only. And this only applied to one or two of their one-click bundles. You know, anything that got a three-box ended up being, you know, working out that it was cheaper to buy the individual components if you bought those three boxes. So you could literally build this one-click bundle, save yourself like $20 tops if you were willing to take those tens of seconds. So Games Workshop, they realized they made a mistake. They mispriced some of these items. So as a result, they made all of the three boxes unavailable. So now all of the pricing is what they wanted it to be at the more expensive one. So, I mean, I have to applaud Games Workshop. They recognized they had made a mistake and they corrected it in the biggest fuck you-est way possible. But, I mean, we know this out of this company. We talked about, like, working for this company. They're so happy to have you starting on your first day. They just remind you that they can't wait to fire your sorry ass because you're a fucking loser who can't cut it. And that's working for them. That's collecting a paycheck.
All right, so he didn't actually say it, but the bundle that Josh Hathaway linked was actually more expensive than buying them all separately.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
That was what he was getting at. Yeah. I think you skipped over that, Nathan.
No, maybe you weren't paying attention. No, I was saying that there was one or two one-click bundles that were more expensive than if you had done it individually. And they specifically mentioned the Eldar Windrider one because it has six Vipers. So instead of six Vipers at, you know, the cost of like $40 each, you could have bought like a three-pack for 80 or 90 or something. and that's why I like, but two three-packs saves me like $30. So Games Workshop's like, oh my God, you're right. Thank you so much for letting us know. Three-pack boxes are unavailable, asshole. And you're just like, really?
You know,
this is the way you went with it?
All right, so, which leads us to the weekly listener poll question for this week. And I'm actually very interested to see what people have to say on this. So the question is, do you shop for your models on Games Workshop's online web store? GamesWorkshop.com, do you shop there, or are you just avoiding it like the plague and you go through every other website that may or may not be available or even eBay. That'll be up on jadagamercast.com.
Maybe we should start eBaying models.
I've looked, trust me. People love to overprice them there, too, but everyone tells you can't catch a deal. But yes, go ahead and vote on that, jadagamercast.com. Let's go ahead and move on to the model of the week. Model of the week once again brings us back to Spartan Games. Because Spartan Games has been going hardcore on getting us images of these upcoming fleets that, you know, we talked about when Steve was on the show a few weeks ago. And we've got another starter fleet, and it also there's also another large ship coming out as well. And it is the Ryushi starter fleet box. Comes with what looks to be a battleship, 4 cruisers, and 6 escorts. The Ryushi are part of the Alliance of Kurok.
Is the battleship a Hadouken class?
Hey-oh. Ryu.
They're not always good. I've never... ever make a claim to that.
I think the models are pretty okay looking. I do agree with Terry. They look more like dicks than the Ndrenzi do.
I picked them because they were the dick fleet.
Yes, exactly, right? But like this one, I kind of like the look of them. I don't think they look terrible, especially their frigates. I think their frigates look very, very cool. I love like the bio domes kind of sitting on the front of them. And if you go look at I believe it's a battle carrier. The battle carrier has a hot tub, which looks pretty rad.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was saying. Because, like, you know, all of the Ryushi ships are keeping that sort of dome-esque, like, detailing, right? You know how every fleet has that one little detail that is their thing. So they all have the domes. And yeah, it's such a fucking swimming pool. Like, I feel like the battle carrier is a country club because you've got your fucking, you know, glass dome, members only. You need to have golf privileges to be able to get in there. But then you can always, you know, for people that can't afford the golf privileges, you can always just get a pool membership, in which case you're a little bit further down on the ship, kind of closer to the, you know, to space. So who knows if that's a good thing, but it's a really classist kind of battle.
If you're looking for a ship to take you to Flossin Paradise, that's the one that's going to take you there. That's a Fifth Element reference. Neither of you got it.
Are you kidding me?
I don't want one position. I want all positions.
Fifth Element is my favorite movie of all time.
Oh, okay, my bad then. Yes, you appreciate it more. Yes. I think when I first looked at the ships, I didn't think dicks. I actually thought Krillian Corvettes, like blockade runners, just the way the engines were positioned, just how wide it was on the back. I thought they looked very, very cool. I mean, I think they do kind of pale in comparison to the last two fleets that we saw, the Hawker fleet and the Works Raptor fleet. I think both of those actually were a little bit more well designed, but again, what I love about Firestorm Armada is they do give everyone the opportunity to play a fleet that kind of that aesthetic speaks to them. You know, it's not just a lot of the same shit over and over again. They really do take the time to design these ships well, and you have to appreciate them for that.
See, yes. And I get that with a lot of the stuff that they're doing, but when I first saw this fleet, the first thing I thought was, oh my God, Spartan Games has run out of ways to do spaceships. Like, they're grasping at this point, at least to me, because I'm just like, you know what? They have so many, like, long, you know, basically two-dimensional, like, we're in a straight line, but this way, at time we got fat asses, and this time we got really skinny cocks, and this time we're spears. And it's just like, you know, a lot of the fleets have this really, really cool aesthetic. And this one just, like, for me, it really, really fell flat. Because, like, I looked at it, and it really felt uninspired. Other than the country club. That, you know, you're just like, you got to give props to people, you know, to a fleet that is going to offer memberships.
I don't know. Maybe it's because it feels familiar. Because when I look at these ships, they really remind me of Battlestar Galactica. That's what I think.
Oh, not even remotely.
Not even, see,
I think the Terran cruisers remind me of Battlestar Galactica.
I don't know. The silhouettes look to me like, because they had that pleasure ship, like when you were talking, when Nathan was talking about.
I was thinking about the pleasure ship as well. I couldn't remember the name of it though.
Yeah.
That's why I went with the Flossed in Paradise reference.
Paradise. That's what it like looks like to me. And I think that's not a bad way to go. It's not like, but when you're looking at the angles, that's what I'm seeing. And, you know, to be fair, most spaceships, if you're a geek and you're familiar with spaceships, they're going to look familiar in some form, right? They're all derivatives of something else. So,
right.
I mean, maybe that's where that I don't know, ennui is coming from.
Well, but you, I don't know. Like I said, it just for me, you look at them and they're only okay. And I think my issue with it is, as they have been carrying on, like you see these flashes of brilliance out of Spartan games. Like the Orishan are completely unique. You know, you've got like flying bottle openers. The Pathogen are really unique. And so it's just like they're taking these ideas, they're really, really working on it. All of the Syndicate and the Omnidyne stuff, it looks really, really good. But again, you look at these ones, and for me, it's just like, it feels like they've gotten to the point where they no longer have unique ideas, and they're just like, well, if we take part, you know, some of the you know, Terran, and we kind of mash it with some Syndicate, and then, you know, hey, look, there we go, it's a new race, everybody. And that's what I mean. Like, I'm not saying that they're terrible. They just really feel uninspired. Because whereas I look at Pathogen and I look at Aquins and I'm just like, fuck yes. Oh my god, I want to get these guys. I want to play. I don't even know if I want to play these guys ever. But I want to own them. I want to paint them. I want to do, you know, I want to have them because I'm really, really inspired and I love the look. These don't do it for me.
But that's the thing, though, right? Like, when you play any mini war game, there's always going to be your Lizardmen or Lang's Tau, right? I think it speaks to the game itself. Yeah. If you can have ships you absolutely love but the aesthetic of. And there are ships
there in Firestorm. You know, there are people who really love this stuff. And the Ryushi, they're like, oh, that's my favorite fleet. Those are great. I'm going for them. I think that's what, you know, that's what I was getting at first when we were talking about Spartan is, there is such a wide range of tastes and aesthetics. And yeah, you know what? This one's not for Nathan, but you know, I think that's what I kind of like about them. Are they the best fleet? No, like I said, they do kind of pale in comparison for me, the last two releases. I'm probably not going to be picking them up. They're not on my list to do like a fleet for Alliance of Kurok, but I like the fact that they put them out and, you know, Spartan Games is really kicking up that release schedule for Firestorm Armada, which is awesome.
How many releases have they had in the last, like, what, 2 years?
Oh, more than you can count in 2 years.
A lot. In the last 6 months, I think they've had 5 releases.
And there's the wife all drunkenly banging away on the table.
I already finished my first bottle of wine. So
my question to you, Lang, because I know you are far more knowledgeable in Firestorm than I am. Is there anything existing in rules or fluff that doesn't have models yet, or can we expect another sort of campaign expansion book like Marauders of the Rift from Spartan Games coming up?
Yes, there are quite a few ships that currently do not have, they have rules, but they do not have models. However, for the most part, I think at this point, I'm trying to recall if there's the only other fleet that we've yet to see models for. If I'm correct about this, is Keldorian, which is a Xenian League fleet.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised we actually haven't seen them before, because when they released the last two, they were both really sort of bang bang. One for Kurok, one for Xenian League. So we've got
Zalokians. We've got their frigates and we've got their cruisers, but we don't have their dreadnought. There's still a few things.
Yeah, I'm still holding out hope that there's like more Pathogen stuff coming.
Yeah, well, there's that as well. I do not believe that, other than Keldorian, I'm trying to think if there's one more Xenian League fleet I'm forgetting. RSN was the big one for Xenian League, and then Works Raptor, and then Keldorian. I swear I'm forgetting one other one. Oh no, Bakesh, and there are models for Bakesh, even though that we are missing still, I think, a Bakesh battleship or a Bakesh dreadnought. But yeah, I think the only fleet that we don't have any models for, at least seen models for at this point, is Kaldorian. Like even in the expansion, we saw like the one Supermax model, but they've got like a full fleet of Supermax models that you can play. So like we're missing the cruisers, we're missing the frigates for them. There's quite a few models that are missing out of that range, but other than Kaldorian, and I could be wrong, but other than them, I think everyone else, that fleet has a model at this point. So yeah, I mean, they're on the road. I mean, they're doing what we said they needed to be doing, which is releasing all of these models that we've been waiting for the longest time. In terms of rules, the Ryushi are pretty middle of the road. I don't think anybody's going to be diving on them because they're the new Works Raptor. But really, you know, I fully expect to see Kaldorian in the next little bit here. All right, so that's the models of the week there. We'll have pictures of them up. If you haven't seen them yet, you can go to JD Gamercast Facebook group. I did actually want to talk about Firestorm Armada recently because somebody had posted on the Firestorm Armada group for Alberta. I'm going to light a cigarette here. Ah, dead air. All right, so somebody had posted on the Facebook group, Jordan, and again, like I'm not trying to call the guy out or anything like that, but there were some people who were saying, like, you know, I don't really like the models that I currently have for my fleet, but I love the rules for my fleet. How do you guys feel about like me grabbing, you know, Aquin models and using them as frigates in my Cerulean fleet, because the Cerulean frigates are all, you know, like they're the only frigate in the game as far as I know that is, and I argued with him about this, but I ended up being wrong. They're the only frigate in the game that's like part resin, part pewter, and they're really, really back heavy, and they're fucking terrible to stay on the flight stands. And he's like, you know, how do you guys feel about it? And there was one guy responded by saying like, oh yeah, it's no big deal. My buddy doesn't like this fleet, but he likes the look of them, but he likes these rules. So he just plays this fleet as this, and I don't think it's a big deal so long as, you know, you tell your opponent before the match. I don't like that.
Yeah, but you,
especially in a game like
old school, you're old school, Lang. No, like proxying of anything.
But you can't put guardsmen on the table and proxy them as space marines. It just it goes against everything. Listen, if you're just playing a game in your basement, who gives a fuck, right?
Yeah.
If somebody wanted to do that at an event that I was running, I would say no. Listen, you can't do that. Like, Works Raptor were very, very popular when they came out. No models until just recently. And in almost every single, in both events that I ran, people had converted Works Raptor models or proxied Works Raptor models because there were just none available, right? The people had converted them, they'd made their own, because there was just no models, right? Everyone wanted Works Raptor Corvettes. And, you know, but to say like, oh, I don't like the aesthetic, but I want to play these rules, like that bugs me. Just play the fleet. Yeah. Like, if you just want to win, play the fleet that's going to get you to win. You want to.
So what Lang is saying, take your Marine army, paint them a neutral color, and then cherry pick your rules.
Well, but again, that's Marines for Marines.
I totally get it. And you know what? I'm on board with you, too, because, I mean, like, realistically, how is that any different? Like, even if we're going to say, okay, I'm playing Aquins.
This Carnifex is my Dreadnought.
Well, yeah, this kind of totally everyone knows the Fex Dread. That's not a knife, that's a spoon. But I mean, like, how is that any different than me saying, okay, I'm playing Aquins. I really, really love the aesthetic of the Mark Ones, but holy shit, do I want the Mark Two rules? So all these guys that are Mark Ones, they're actually Mark Twos. It's confusing as fuck to people. You know, if you're going to take the model, play its rules. You know, especially like, you know, I get that the frigates, they don't really balance well because being a resin pewter mix instead of all pewter the way my Dendrenzi ones are, because that is much easier.
Right.
And I'm not even being sarcastic. Like, it's just like the resin throws the weight off. Like, I totally get it. But it's just like, why don't you, like, it's just like pin it or magnetize it or something to make it sit easier so that the weight becomes less of an issue. You have modeling options, but I'd never feel that proxying or counts as is ever really appropriate, because at the end of the day, this game, like all miniatures games, has to at least abide somewhat by the what you see is what you get rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to be able to look across the table at your fleet, at your army, and know at a glance. I mean, I may not need, you know, I don't need to know that, okay, your Star Admiral is here, and, the, you know, like, Firestorm's the worst example for this. But in a game of Warhammer, I don't need to know what war gear your HQs have, because I can at least look and go, that's his fucking captain.
That's a power fist.
That's his chaplain. He's got a power fist. I don't need to know what other bullshit he has. I can plan accordingly. And if you're just going to take Aquan frigates and count, say, these aren't Aquans, they're whatever the fuck, in my list because I like the models better, like, it's such a fuck you. It's such a fuck you to old school miniature gamers. And maybe this is why we're Jaded Gamercast, because we're both like up in arms about it. But it's just like, again, I want to be able to set my models down and at a glance know what it is you're playing, because that way my brain, the moment that we agree on a game and we've pulled all of our models out and we're still fucking around and putting scenery on our board, my brain is already working on strategies for me. Right. And I don't want to be deploying and then you deploying these guys and be like, oh, by the way, these aren't what they are. I'm counting them as this. Yeah. Fuck you. Because it changes things. It's not fair to if you're going to play opponents. And like you said, if you're just playing a friendly game in your basement, go nuts. But if you are going to a game store, you damn well better either have the existing models or have a passable conversion. If you made it, you know, like, I'm not going to fault anyone that shows up to a Games Workshop with a Turvagon that's their old converted Carnifex model that they built and painted up before Games Workshop got off the pot and released one. Like, I'm not just going to be like, well, that's not a Turvagon. You can't take it.
Right. Well, and here's the stupid thing when it comes to Firestorm Armada. Firestorm Armada has such good rules when it comes to taking out Alliance fleets that if you like those models, you can take them in your fleet. There's literally almost no stopping you from mixing and matching models as long as you're not going across the, you know, Xenian League Alliance of Kurok side. And even if you want to do that, you can play pirate and take those models. You can take them as looted. You can take them as you know, just part of the fleet. You pay for it. It's part, like, it's in the fucking rules. And, you know, to me, it just doesn't make any sense to grab a model because you like the way it looks better and it sits on the peg better. When it's like, yeah, but you can just drill the hole further back on the model. Nobody's looking at the underside of your spaceship. You know, you can magnetize them. You can do all this kind of stuff. Well, but, you know, Ward magnetized all of his Cerellians and didn't have a problem.
And if you drill it back, you could maybe even fill in the first hole with liquid green stuff.
Or regular ass green stuff. Whatever. Super glue. Fill it with super glue, man. But yeah, I mean, I think it's silly. When you look at the rules, when you look at the models, when you look at the way that the game plays, to sit there and just be like, oh, I like Dendrenzi. The models are awesome. But yeah, these are absolutely Syndicate because their rules are great. And you're just like, you know, fuck off. Really? Like, it's...
Fuck your...
Just make... And again, I'm not telling Jordan to fuck off. But really, like, it's...
Jordan, fuck off.
That's what he said. There you go. What I'm saying here is that, you know, if you want to take those models, use the rules. Use the rules. At my event...
Your opponent, Matt.
You're not gonna be allowed to show up with mix and match bullshit. John Kingsway played in the last event, and he was playing a pirate, or no, he's putting together a pirate fleet. He didn't play with it, but in his pirate fleet, oh no, it was Scott. Scott in his pirate fleet had Syndicate. He had some Taraki in there as well because he used the rules to get them in there. They're from Alliance of Kurok. He took them into his pirate fleet. And he had two big units of Cerellian frigates. He had them balanced. They were working just fine. It's not like they were falling all over the place. And he played them as looted frigates, upgraded their stats, and made them fucking crazy good. You can make them even better than they are. But use the rules, right? There's a reason why that's there. It's balanced that way. The whole I'm playing this because I don't like my current models. I really don't like that. But anyways, that was just me getting on a rant. But hey, it's filling up an episode of We Don't Have Anything to Talk About. So
well,
let's talk about.
Listen, we certainly we're not going to buy Apocalypse because no, fuck no that noise.
It's, you know, I mean, I think the biggest thing is whenever you play.
Hey, Terrison is.
If you don't
the stud is give contagious.
A shit, if you don't give a shit about your opponent, do that. Like, and like if you're playing with friends, there's a level of familiarity. You're playing in your basement. Everyone fucking knows each other. That's fine, right? You have that there. But if you're playing, I think that's what when it comes to when people talk about events, especially like an event you're running, for example, like, the chances you will play someone you do not know is extremely high.
Yeah.
So playing shit that isn't what is represented in your model is just it's just disrespectful because you are then asking your opponent to remember for themselves and for you what things are, even though that's not the way they appear. That's bullshit. You don't need to be doing that.
I really like Chameleon Skinks, but love Knoblar models, so I'm just going to put Knoblars in as my...
Oh, yeah.
Chameleon Skinks.
Chameleon Knoblars. I painted them colors.
It's like asking your freaking opponent to read the word blue every time you mean red. Like, it's bullshit. You don't need that. And I think it also gets to the idea of hobby and the level of hobby you put in and the difference between being a hobbyist and being a gamer. And if you're a hobbyist, you love the models, you love what you do to your models, you paint them, you enjoy the aesthetic, you're a hobbyist. And if you're a gamer, you just care about fucking winning. So you don't care what kind of models you're playing with. That's right. Bullshit.
Right. That's my view on it as well. All right. So you played in that tournament over there at Imaginary Wars. Tell us a little about the tournament, Terry.
Well, it was really interesting. Kyle at Imaginary Wars, he runs really, he always has run interesting events. He's usually the brainchild for a lot of the scenarios we run when Nathan and I were running events. And we'll be running events in the future with him. And he created an event where you basically build yourself an 1800 point list, but you only can play 800 points of it at a time. And within each scenario, he restricted the number of force org slots depending on the scenario. So we played games between 700 points and 850 points, I think, with building out of units, like taking whole units that we've built in armies that would fit an 1800 point list. And it was a lot of fun. He made it a factioned event, so he split the armies up.
Although I don't understand why he didn't just say, this is side Eldar plus the one Grey Knight player versus everyone else.
It was a lot of, there was a lot of Eldar players present, 12. Yeah, there was like maybe 5 Eldar players out of 12. I think I mentioned that, but it was terrific to be able to play small games again. And I think it kind of reminded me of like summer campaign-y style events. And it was actually a kickoff to a campaign he is running in the store, which is, I'm looking forward to it, but the focus is on small games. So like, I think the limit on their campaigns is around 1,000 points for campaigns moving forward for the next, I don't know, I think it may be 8 weeks or so. But
we'll just wait itself, for the players.
Yeah, pack. We'll wait for the details. But the tournament itself was just really fun. It was really fun to play games where, like, I don't know, I'm a fan of fucking with the game a little bit. When you're a gamer, if you know your army or you're learning about your army, small games are really fun, no matter what.
Well, I think that's actually a really, really good point, because you know what, with Apocalypse, obviously Games Workshop is trying to push bigger is better, and I mean, they were the first ones to run Ardboys, which was the single biggest, silliest points level that any tournament had ever been run at least widely. I mean, you know, sure, if you in your basement invited 6 people over and you played 4,000 points, I don't give a fuck. It doesn't count. Because this was a national, actually an international, because it was country stand and neighbor stand, we're both involved with it, tournament system that was huge amounts of points. And I remember when we were both working for the company, Lang, I mean, what was it? They were 1,700 points was huge. Otherwise, every gaming night was 1,000. Most tournaments were 1,500. 1,700 points was like conquests and grand tournaments, things like that, which was huge. And now it is not uncommon to see 1,850, 2,000, you know, all of these size games. So I actually do think, and this was something that painting legend Dan Beyer over on Immaterium Press posted, where he's just like, should we not, as a community, kind of, you know, knee-jerk swing the pendulum back from this apocalypse bullshit and start fighting for smaller games again? Because I feel that, you know, as someone who initially got into the hobby playing smaller points games, like, I think up until the last the last 5 years, I would say, I had played more games at 1,000 points than I had played at any other points level combined. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's just like small games is what you always played. And when you are trying to build a list in those smaller points values, it's not an issue of I have one of everything. And now my idea of list balance is what can I not have two of everything of?
Mike Frank out in Gaming Purgatory, you know, he and I chat every once in a while on the phone, and he tells me just the most ridiculous stories you've ever heard. Where, like, the guy who's running the tournament's 13-year-old son proxying his army with toilet paper rolls won best painted.
What?
Yeah, no, this is... I won't go into the details, but, like... crazy ass shit. Genius. Like, it's bananas out there. And again, I coined the term Gaming Purgatory is where he lives, but like he absolutely is in like hell. Can't play fantasy because nobody plays it, but like, you know, he goes out and he plays 40K, and he's been playing 40K because it's like the only way to go. And that whole group out there is convinced that the only way to play Warhammer 40,000 on a tournament level is at 2,500 points.
Oh my God.
He's like, yep, and every nobody wants to play anything other than 2,500. Nobody will even think about playing a game at like 15 or 17. Like, he says, no, they are dead set on this idea. And like the guy running the local store, which is like the only game spot for, you know, 500 kilometers, is basically sitting there going like, oh yeah, man, this is great. Buy up all that shit. Nobody paints it. Nobody gets it done. Like, it's all proxy garbage. But like, they do that. And they all think that that's how you're supposed to play because bigger is better. And it's just, it's this ridiculous mentality that made so much sense when you first get into the game. You know, when we first started playing, game night at Games Workshop was 40K, 1,000 points.
On a 4x4.
On a 4x4. That was it, man.
4x4.
And you had some of the best fucking games out there. And, like, you had to be really, like, good on the board. You had to know what you're doing. We've completely gone away from that to the point now where, you know, you go out to game nights and every game night is 1,700 points or 1,500 points. And I'm not saying that that's terrible, not by any stretch of the imagination. But when we used to play 1,000-point games, when somebody said to you, hey, the tournament's going to be 1,700, that was like, okay, it's now, it's game time, tournament level, bigger is better. Mm-hmm. And you would get all these people together, and you'd have three people on each side of the table, and you'd play like a 3,000-point game where you each had a 1,000-point list, and it was crazy, and everybody loved it, and it was awesome. When you first start into the game, that's what you want. You're like, yeah, man, the big games. Like, could you imagine 10 Baneblades? And then you get there and you realize how bad it is. Like, you just, you realize that all of the list building aspect has gone out the window. And it's just, you know, a game where you get to play three turns and 3 hours have gone by. And you're just frustrated because you can't play the game and you feel like you don't have any control over what's happening. Now, and I'm sure people will disagree with me and say like, oh no, you know, you're always in control of the general, blah, blah, blah.
No, but there's nothing like, okay, having played 800 points, when you come into an event expecting to play games, like, or not necessarily expecting, but like building a list for 1800, for example, you lose a unit that was meant to belong in an 1800 point list, and it's like 200 points. That hurts. It hurts like crazy. 1,000 point games means you make hard decisions about your list building, and it means you make hard decisions on the table as to what is expendable and what is not. And I learned so much more about mitigating loss, about playing the objective, about just the basics of 40K that we've forgotten because we've been really indulgent about the way we've played this game for the last you know, 5 years, that it's just nice to go back to these basics. It's nice to remember what your list can do when it is small and how fast attack actually means. Fast attack, 800 points on a 4x6. Fast attack actually is fast, and it makes a difference, right? Like, what's a fast attack choice in 1850 on a 4x6 anymore? It's nothing. Everything moves fast.
It's that thing without really, really good armor or good weapons.
Yeah, it's expendable. It's a loss mm-hmm. leader. It's all that crap.
No, but I mean, I think the other thing is... I was going to say but
I'm going to drink anyways cuz you thought it.
It's true. I did think it. No, but I mean, the other thing to keep in mind is maybe this is because I have never played a Space Marine army. I mean, my Tyranids prior to the Credace book were the hordiest of the horde. I outnumbered everyone on the board. And because of the fact that there was this huge push towards bigger games, and it was always like 1850, 2000 point games, I never, ever, ever saw a game to completion. I cannot name a single tournament game that I got to play through to the end. And that actually does make a difference, especially with a lot of armies, because while, you know, Imperial Guard were insanely popular for a while for their ability to alpha strike and win a game on turn one, there are so many armies like Green Tide Orcs or, you know, back in the day, the Endless Swarm Tyranids, who were like the game, you know, the turn five and turn six winners. So it's like, I know for the first three turns, you're going to fuck me over. And that's fine. That is how I have built my list. Go ahead, make me remove models by the handful, because I know that at turn four, things are going to balance out. On turn five, it's going to start to swing my way. And on turn six, you're fucked. And then you take a list like that to tournaments and you just draw after draw after draw.
You don't have
because you never make it to turn six. You never get the chance to play your game out. You never get a chance to finish anything. And as games get bigger, time limits in tournaments were not increasing. I remember when we would play in tournaments, a 1,500-point game was given 2 hours, and you always got to the end, except in very rare matchups where it was like Green Tide Orcs versus Endless Swarm Tyranids. Well, you're moving 400 models every turn. You know, you're not going to finish. Right. And then when they added 500 points onto that, they gave us 30 whole minutes. And you went from finishing games to having them called to time.
Not even that. You've also got, like, extra shooting phases in other phases now.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, 6th edition as a game is basically the stupid, finicky, extra rule bullshit edition. I mean, when you look at it, 6th edition compared to 5th is a much slower game. You do not get through turns as quickly because of mechanics like Overwatch. The fact that if I declare a charge and I complete it, if I have multiple initiatives in my unit and you have multiple initiatives in your unit and they're not the same initiatives, there are 4 steps of movement. There is so much additional shit. Yeah, and don't get us wrong. Shit.
These aren't bad rules that we dislike.
I love them. But I'm only pointing out that, you know, a 2,000-point game of 5th edition 40K could conceivably finish within a 2.5-hour time limit depending on the pairing. A 2,000-point game of 6th edition 40K, regardless of pairing, will not finish unless it is so one-sided. You know, my alpha strike won, and I literally wiped you off the table on turn one, and then I just mopped up turn two and three. Great, we're done in an hour and a half. Otherwise, you're not finishing. So, I mean, I, for one, would love to see 6th edition scale it back down to lower points levels. I'd love to see a 1,500-point tournament. In fact, I'm going to say it right now. If anyone in Alberta runs a 1,500-point 40K tournament, I will be there because I do feel that 6th edition requires smaller points values in order to give it a fair shot, because otherwise all you don't even have to build a good list. You just have to build one that can manipulate the clock. Because I remember way back when in like 7th edition fantasy, I mentioned that as well, where I was just like, I'll just take an Orc and Goblin list that is all Night Goblins, all Wizards, and then like a big Squig unit, because I know that on the first two turns, I'll blast enough victory points for the win, then my squig unit will explode. And that was back when, like, if your 100 squigs exploded, each squig had to move individually. Yep. I was like, I ride out the clock, you never get to combat. And that's the kind of bullshit lists that you're building now for tournament play in 6th edition because games are too big.
Well, I think the other thing was there was a certain level of transparency at Kyle's event, which was, it was exceptional. You, for those of you who are not familiar with the format, typically you do judging for painting at the beginning of the event. Before anyone rolls any dice, you judge everyone else's army. And so everyone put out their full 1,800 point force, and people had a chance to see what was dangerous in everyone else's army. They had a look, and they got to see what was there. And Kyle has a very high expectation of WYSIWYG at his events. So if it was modeled, it was on there. And people could then, once you got your scenario, you got a sheet indicating what was available to you in your force org, how many points you were going to play. You knew 5 out of 6 games who your opponent was and what he was playing. So you could then create a list based on your scenario, your opponent, and he also had these secret mission cards that you could pick every game what your secret mission was to gain extra overall points, victory points for yourself. And you built your list based on that. So it was very much an exercise in generalship. It was always an exercise in generalship. But playing at those small levels, it condenses all of that.
Hey, speaking of generalship, didn't you thrash the guy that won best general?
I didn't thrash.
So where did you place, Terry? Because we didn't get to that. Oh my
gosh, it was brutal. I placed 9th overall. I think I rode my sportsmanship to that space. Girl? It was brutal. Yeah, first girl as usual. I keep my standard up. As I was told by one very prominent Games Workshop Canada employee at one point in my hobby career, I guess. I am one of those few female gamers who aren't, quote-unquote, rubbish at the game.
He meant it as a compliment. It was the most backhanded thing I'd ever heard, where he's like, wow, you know, most girls are rubbish at the game, but you're not.
All women are weak-willed, but you're all
right. You're all right. But I think, like, for example, okay, so I'm going to say I beat Scott West. Scott West.
That's scrub. He's such a scrub, though. I mean, that's the biggest thing.
What a loser.
Oh, I mean, he doesn't even paint his own models.
Oh, ouch. I can't believe you went there. We were joking about it because he had another guy who was actually playing at the tournament airbrush the base code on his Eldar fleet. And turns out, like, that guy was playing. So people were joking about whether or not they would vote for that guy's Eldar army or the other Eldar army he painted. But I beat Scott West because the scenario was very one-sided. Like, it was very, for that pairing, he had all of his Eldar armies out of their vehicles, out where they could be squishy, and I could just show up wherever I wanted on the board and shoot him on the first turn. So it was really rough for him. And, yeah, I beat him, but he mitigated that loss like crazy. He knew his army well enough to, by the time all the victory points were tallied, all the battle points were tallied, I had beat him by 1. It was a minor victory for me, totally minor victory for me. And it was just that tight. And it can't be about winning all the time, because part of that scenario was the faction who was losing got the benefit of that scenario, which was coming out and getting that first turn and getting that, like, the shooting. They knew where the opponent was.
So it was bullshit?
It was totally we want to make this up to you guys because you guys are getting thrashed. And, you know, my faction, which was the you know, side order.
Best sportsman faction. The best sportsman faction. To give you an idea.
Yeah, we got thrashed. I think partly it was because a lot of the very experienced veteran 6th ed gamers were on that side of the faction split, and it just so happened that the extra guys got who were more veteran on the Eldar side ended up on that side, so that's kind of where there was an imbalance there already. But it was interesting to see how, despite that turn, standings remained, and guys who still were really good at mitigating losses, being smart with their armies and managing that scenario, playing the objective, were able to win it even though they were losing models by the fistful off the board. And I think that's the joy of playing small games. It's like Apocalypse, where, you know, you're taking models off by the fistful, sure, but whenever you take a model off a table at 800 points, oh my god, does it hurt like you've been shot. It hurts. It hurts every time. And that pain, it makes you a better general. That suffering you go through, it makes you a better general. So,
all right.
So I just got to go through it.
Real quick, let's do something shiny. Oh. Everybody who has not watched the most recent UFC should just turn it off right now and just not listen to the rest of this. But, god damn it, Anderson Silva got knocked the fuck out.
Ah,
I was on my feet cheering. You know, and I think Joe Rogan said it best kind of after the fact when he was just like, if you're not going to take your opponent seriously and you're not going to take the sport seriously and you get in the cage with a professional fighter, you're going to get hurt. And that's all that happened. And, you know, like we've been waiting so long for him and his fucking rope-a-dope bullshit toying with his opponent to just backfire on him. And it backfired on him like 3 times in that fight where he was like, yeah, come hit me. Then he'd take one in the nose and be like, oh, fuck, I got punched. You know, and it's just like, I got nothing. I don't hate Anderson Silva by any stretch of the imagination, but like the guy drives me nuts. And I'm always saying he's not the best fighter pound for pound. He's just not. We had this huge.
He had too many holes in his games.
He's been in trouble so many times that it's like the fact that he's continued to win fights is amazing. Because again, he's an amazing fighter. He is the best striker out there. I'm sorry, nobody's going to deny that. I had this big argument with a buddy of mine about whether George St. Pierre was the best pound for pound or whether it was Anderson Silva. And throughout the entire debate, I kept kissing my Canada flag tattoo on my arm. Drive my point home. He would like make a point. I just slowly bring my bicep up and like kiss the Canada flag and be like George St. Pierre. But like as soon as he got knocked out, and he got knocked out looking like a fucking idiot, I turned to my buddy and I'm just looking at him and he's just like, yeah, I just felt like I wasted an hour of my life arguing for that man. And I'm just like, dude, yeah, that's gonna happen. You know, you're going to get behind a guy who's going to get in there and fuck around. And I mean, already people are throwing around that like, oh, he threw the fight. He didn't want to win. He was trying to get knocked out because he wants to retire. You know, I'm just like,
his eyes rolled into the back of his
head. Oh, he was out cold. There was no thrown fight there. He wasn't giving it his all. I think everybody's aware of the fact that he was not really trying all that hard. He didn't really take his opponent all that seriously. But
you know, but I mean, like the thing with Anderson Silva is, I mean, here is an actual statistic. He was middleweight champion for 2,458 days. Like that is a fucked up amount of time. Yeah,
17 title defenses in a row.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just like the guy was there forever, and kind of like Manny Pacquiao in boxing, you eventually get to the point where you are so dominant. Because he only ever went up to 205 to fight scrubs. Like, let's be honest. Forrest Griffin never had a chance. Stephen Bonner never had a chance. James Irvin.
Yeah, James Irvin, the Sandman.
James the Sandman Irvin never had a chance against him. So it's not like he was ever going up and fighting dangerous fighters like John Jones or Shogun or Machida or any of these like really, really interesting fights at 205. The guy was so dominant. Like Manny Pacquiao, you eventually kind of lose the desire to train. You know, like it's just one of those things where it's just like when you know that showing up is a paycheck and best case scenario, a new personal best for you, who gives a fuck? And I think when you are champion for 7 years, you've hit that point.
Yeah.
And I think that was the biggest problem with Anderson Silva. Because, I mean, you've seen it. Like, you've seen him at his best when he's when he's beating the fuck out of Rich Franklin or the second Chael Sonnen fight. Or, hell, even pulling out the victory in the first Chael Sonnen fight.
Yeah.
You've seen him pushed. You've seen him at his best. He's proven that he is a very, very good fighter. But you've also seen some really fucking bizarre bullshit, like his Talos Latest fight, his Demian Maia fight. So it's just like, when you are fighting for personal bests and a paycheck, eventually you're going to check out. And I think that this is what it was. He probably didn't take Weidman as seriously as he should have, because in fairness, when you look at the who's who of people he's knocked the fuck out, who the fuck is Chris Weidman? Like, he doesn't even rank up there on the same list as, like, Vitor Belfort and Rich Franklin and Chael Sonnen and Yushin Okami. Like, he's a nobody. So I totally get why Anderson Silva showed up kind of looking like a jackass. Is he probably trained like one?
Yeah, and, you know, we've said it in the past. We're basically, I mean, we saw it in the first round of this fight where instantly Chris Weidman takes him down. He eats some shots. He gets into a bad submission that obviously fucked up his knee. And, you know, he was frustrated. So he goes to the mental game. He starts pushing. He starts taunting. He starts trying to get him to play his game. I mean, at one point, Anderson Silva threw a knee that I thought for sure was going to end it. And it just misses his, Chris Weidman's head by like half an inch. Would have ended the fight right then and there. But, you know, like we've said it before, as soon as he gets frustrated in a fight, he starts acting stupid and like really trying to like get into people's head. And I know people hate that and they really think like, oh, he's disrespectful or whatever. It's like, no, he's not being disrespectful. It's just that's part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get into your head. I mean, and how many guys go into the ring against Anderson Silva where they've already lost in their own head? As soon as he starts taunting them, they just lose their shit. Like even Stefan Bonner. Good fighter, looks like an amateur in that ring. I mean, Anderson Silva backs up into the cage, puts his arms down, and is like, hit me. And, like, Stefan Bonner drops his head, isn't even looking, is just, like, throwing punches like haymakers over his head, not aiming at anything. It's just like, what the fuck is going on? But, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that he said, like, I don't want a title shot. I mean, it does kind of cheapen Chris Weidman's win a little bit, where he's just like, no, I don't want a rematch. I've got 10 more fights left on my contract. I'm just going to fuck around. You're just going to like, it's clear that the guy did not want to be the champion anymore. Like, he's been looking to retire for about 4 years now.
He wanted to retire at 35 and he's 38 and still fighting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his contract's good. He's making a fuck ton of money. But I mean, for me, I mean, yes, Anderson Silva has been dominant for so long. Does he deserve an immediate rematch? Fuck no. I think that is disrespectful to Chris Weidman, because Chris Weidman
put
Anderson Silva out cold. This isn't like, because like when you look at all of the immediate rematches that have happened with title fights, they have all been very close or split decisions. You know, or even a draw. I mean, fuck, Gray Maynard, Frankie Edgar fought to a draw, so they got an immediate rematch to fucking settle it.
I thought Matt Serra got an immediate rematch.
Matt Serra did not. He won a TV show.
That's right.
Matt Serra won a TV show. And then George St. Pierre had to.
The rematch, though.
No, he had to take Matt Hughes on 10 days' notice and dominate.
Matt Hughes, because that was for the next number one contender spot.
And even after beating Matt Hughes like a baby, he still had to go beat up Josh Koscheck like a baby before he got Matt Serra again. I think it was Sarah's first title defense with St. Pierre, but St. Pierre fought a fuck. Yeah, but St. Pierre fought a fuck ton to get back there right away.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like I said, I think it's disrespectful. Chris Weidman knocked him out cold, and for the first time in 7 years, there is something interesting about the middleweight division. I would like to see Chris Weidman fight a top-tier middleweight like Chael Sonnen or even Dan Henderson.
Would be crazy.
I think that's what we're going to see. That's what everybody wants to see. I don't think that it's going to be a big surprise. But yeah, anyways, it was interesting. If you haven't watched the fights, go watch them. But at the current moment, my clothes are sticking to me like I've just been dunked by a big tank of water and I'm about to do a flash dance.
I think the Dianoga pulled him underneath the water.
No, if Dagobah is my crotch, then we all know what the Dianoga is. You know? You know what I'm saying? Right? It's big and it's black and it surfaces sometimes. I lost the metaphor.
It really just got away from you.
It got away from me, but it's still it's a big dick. Oh my God. I am sweating like a whore in church who is lit on fire. I've been like toweling off this entire episode. Like, as you guys are talking, I'm just like wiping my face and like trying to like stay cool and like fanning myself because it is fucking hot and I can't sit out here anymore. That is Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
I'm Terry.
Have a good one.
Cheers.